Welcome to the Rangers Rundown. It's been a minute, but we're still here. I am Max. I'm joined tonight by Mike and Hayden.
Hey, guys.
Hello, everyone.
And we are here to talk about the 2018 Texas Rangers, because it's the end of July, and we're still doing that thing. Are they still playing?
Well, the schedule that they gave us all at the beginning of the year, I mean, says that they're supposed to. So I would assume so, but I cannot give you a firsthand, you know, source there. Sorry.
They played today.
Did they?
They did play today.
Because I was going to go that I can neither confirm nor deny the Texas Rangers actually showed up after the All-Star break.
Well, not many fans did, let me tell you. There were probably less than 5,000 fans out there today, which can you blame them? It was 107 degrees during the game.
Is that real? It was only 5,000?
They're saying less than. I mean, of course, you know, the named attendance, it's going to be 15,000 because of season ticket holders, but actual people in attendance... Yeah, that's what I was hearing. It was less than 5,000. And most of those guys were, like, huddled together in the shade, where you could find shade in the stadium.
I did catch a decent chunk of today's game on television. I was able to do that. And I did see Emily Jones doing a segment where she showed her thermometer readings off of parts of the stadium.
Yeah.
And she was pulling 150 degrees off of a seat.
Yeah, it was crazy. It doesn't surprise me. Jeez. You're trying to sit on one of those plastic seats. Oh, they're
can't even imagine what
hot.
Those metal bleachers were like.
Oh, no, I remember.
I bet you can, Mike.
Yeah.
I don't have to, because we've got Mike here to tell us. No, I think it's come up before. I live in Alabama, and it has been hot and brutally humid. I went to work the other day. I work outside half the time. It was 88% humidity at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And I thought that was pretty rough. And then I watched these last two Rangers games and I was like, yeah, it's fine. This is fine. I can do this. This is okay. Even my dog is a half husky and he's like, yeah, it's fine. This is great. I'm good. I don't live in Texas. That's stupid. People shouldn't be doing anything in 107, much less playing baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. Kudos to those guys, because it's not like you saw a lack of effort from them being lethargic in the heat. Those guys, as poorly as they played this year, they still go out and give it their all.
Okay, kudos to them today, not so much for Saturday. That was pretty bad.
Like, yeah.
It was really
It's
bad.
Hard to lose by 13 and say, you know, they tried. Like, it's hard to do that.
Yeah. Of all the bad baseball this team has played over the last 46 years...
It's pretty rough.
Austin Bibbins-Dirk set a record for most runs given up by a Raiders pitcher.
So, like, just on the off chance that you, listening to this podcast, haven't seen, Austin Bibbins-Dirk came in relief of Bartolo Colon, who was having a good first four innings, and then the rails came off in the fifth. Hard. Mr. Bibbins-Dirk came in, pitched four innings, gave up 11 runs.
Gosh.
With 13 hits, one walk, and zero strikeouts. So that's pretty good.
No, it's
that's
really
the
not.
Worst line I've ever seen. There are three double-digit spots in that line, and with zero strikeouts.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all.
I expect that's how my line would look if I actually got to pitch for the Rangers.
It's pretty bad. I would do it in, like, two-thirds of an inning.
Yeah.
I think I could get one, like, just crap out and one pity out. Like, I feel like a guy would just sort of bunt foul one for me. And I might trick a dude into, like, popping up somehow. But 13, I would do it in a third of an inning, two-thirds of an inning. But, woof. It really blows up the whole Austin Bibbins-Dirk is actually good argument that we had a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
I said he was fine.
I said he was going to be the number five starter next year. I'm not so certain now.
He's the same guy he was before. He's not very good. I like Austin Bibbins-Dirk. I'm pulling for him to be like serviceable. There's not really a great reason to believe he is especially serviceable, but I've seen worse.
That's true.
No, you haven't. Again, he set a record for the most runs given up by a Ranger.
Well,
you,
yeah.
You have not seen worse.
You've seen worse players, but you have not seen worse games, which they do say, you know, you'll see something new every day you go to the ballpark, and that one was a firework.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I will agree and disagree in that I didn't actually watch that game yesterday. Therefore, I have seen worse. So I'm going to cheat and take that as a win. But yeah, no, all kinds of
that's fake news, stuff. Sir. Just saying.
Yeah, yeah, I'll take it. I'll eat that one. All kinds of cool first time in baseball things happening. We've had plenty of stuff go on over the last week, 10 days since we have recorded. Obviously, we missed the All-Star game. The Home Run Derby was actually pretty fun this year. Did y'all watch that?
I did not.
Hayden?
Yeah, I didn't see any of the All-Star stuff.
Oof.
I haven't watched the All-Star game or the Home Run contest since Josh hit a gazillion that
That is
year.
A great, great note to end on, though.
Yeah.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was so
end
fun.
Recording.
That was...
Bye-bye. Yeah. That's Rangers Rundown, everybody. Yeah. No, the Home Run Derby actually has been very fun the last couple of years. I really rather like this new format that they're rolling with, the timed one as opposed to the strikes. I think it's actually kind of fun. It's kind of cool. I was busy for the Home Run Derby this year, and the lineup wasn't particularly engaging, although it really was actually a pretty good show. Like, it was some good television. There was controversy, which is a very stupid thing to have about a Home Run Derby. Folks were accusing the Harpers of cheating for Bryce's, like, bizarrely jacked dad throwing pitches with the ball still in the air off the bat. Of course, as was pointed out, Mr. Harper, the senior, was probably just watching the umpire signal, and the umpire, if anything, was cheating. So Bryce managed to get a couple of dingers that maybe he shouldn't have, but I think he would have won that thing anyway. It was actually pretty fun. The All-Star game was highly entertaining. It was very much a 2018 baseball game. Very three true outcomes. There were walks. There were home runs. There were a lot of home runs. It was a record for an All-Star game when it came to home runs. There were contributions from at least one Texas Ranger. When I say at least, I mean exactly one. Shin-Soo Chu! Base hit off of Josh Hader. That was pretty fun. Did y'all at least catch that one in, like, highlight form or what have you?
Well, yeah, especially since Hader caught a little heat after the game when someone dug up some dirt on his...
Like, during the game, like, in the middle of it.
Yeah,
he talk about that a little bit?
He shut down his Twitter account in the middle of the game. So, to me, it's ridiculous. You dig up something from, what was it, 7 years ago while he was still in high school, and it's like, okay, come on. You know, there's got to be a statute of limitations on these things. And high school boys say really stupid things on Twitter, or at least so I'm told. So, I don't know. I thought, and I'm very much PC, but I thought it was a little much.
Yeah, it definitely was weird. Kind of this man's on the mound and kind of having his whole reputation. I mean, it's not like it was... not something that he said, so it wasn't like unfounded or anything, but very bizarre, very 2018. That because I saw Josh Hader like trending and people talking about it, and I'm like, what? And then I Google search or Twitter search, oh. Now, one thing I will say though, I mean, you can't excuse any of it, and I wouldn't do that. There was one thing that I did see where one of the more problematic of those tweets was actually photoshopped. So if you're a listener and you, I don't know, just know that.
It was if you're a listener here, you may have very much seen that Photoshop tweet because it was shared by an LSB adjacent account.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that.
Kind of problematic.
Yeah, I was the only person that I saw that like kind of engaged with that. And again, not, you know, there's no like PR work or anything like that. I'm just saying is that because one of like the points was that, well, actually he said this in 2016, so you can't really say that you were, you know, young and ignorant. Well, that one wasn't real, so there is that. I don't know. I'm glad that it didn't happen to our team. What was really weird is the is all the Milwaukee fans giving him a standing ovation today. That was really weird.
That is weird. But, hey, MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, all of you guys, you could probably get an unpaid intern whose sole job it was to go through every rookie's social media accounts and dig up the stuff and get rid of it right then. I mean, how hard is that?
Oh, yeah. No, if you're an agent, how is the first thing that you're doing is not wiping somebody's social media?
That's beyond me. Like I said, you could get an unpaid intern to do that for you, just so they could put it on their resume that they work for the NFL or something like that. It's sometimes sports, they just do really dumb things.
This is actually something I saw come up in the draft this year. There were a couple of players, and I'm just blanking on names, and a really cursory Google search didn't pull it up. But I remember seeing draft prospects this year and last year as well who went and shut down Twitter accounts, deleted Twitter accounts, shut down their Facebooks, locked things out to try and remove themselves from this kind of criticism. And where I'm going to stand in on the Josh Hader take is that, yes, I don't think it's 100% fair to judge 2018 Josh Hader as a man, as a person, as a player, based on things he said in 2010, 2011, when he was 17 or 18 years old. The argument that has been brought up a bunch is like, oh yeah, we said dumb stuff when we were kids. I didn't say a whole bunch of like really wildly racist, homophobic, and misogynistic stuff when I was 17 or 18. Like, I quote, I was raised right, or whatever you want to say. I wasn't out there spouting that kind of thing on Twitter. That's pretty bad. Like, that's not a thing you just go, eh. You know, boys will be boys. That's bad. That's a thing that Josh Hader, I think, should apologize for. Even if it doesn't mean it, it's a thing that's, I think, important to baseball to come out there and say, this is not the kind of stuff I stand for. Even if it is, I don't, whatever. Like, Josh Hader would not be the only person in baseball who has, shall we say, socially problematic opinions in multiple directions. There can be people who have different positions that are rough in other ways. I think what Hader had to say when he was a 17 or 18 year old isn't really relevant to judging him as a person now, but it's still something he needs to get in front of if he's not going to get behind it. And I think we'd all rather prefer he not get behind it. Therefore, I think it's something that is worth talking about, in that was pretty messed up. Like, I didn't do that stuff when I was 17 or 18. I don't think it's a universal thing that folks say these sorts of things. And I hope he can come out there and he can establish that he's not that kind of person. He got immediate support from some of his teammates, including teammates of Hispanic origin and a black teammate in Lorenzo Cain. And really, Jesus Aguilar also had positive things to say. And Cain was the one I saw the first and the most prominently, who was like, that's not what Josh is. This is not who he is. You know, I wouldn't be saying this if I thought that this was this kind of person. I have reasons to stand for what I believe in. And that was actually pretty valuable to me, to see Lorenzo Cain, a guy who doesn't need to support the teammate so aggressively, who could very much say something bland and like, hey, I'm all about the team, and you know, my teammates wouldn't do that kind of thing. Like, he could have been really neutral about it, and he wasn't. And that means a lot to me. So I think it's very problematic, but I think it's also something that can be dismissed with the proper amount of address from Hader. So I'm not going to get bent out of shape about it. I'm not going to say I'm never watching Josh Hader again. You know, screw this guy. I'm not rooting for the Brewers. I hope he gets hit by a bus. I don't believe in that at all. It's like, I'd like you to come up and say, wow, that was pretty bad. And woof, you know, I'm not that guy anymore. I think that's important.
Yeah, I would agree that whenever this all was happening, and you obviously then what you think of is, well, what comes next? And especially since he's a really good baseball player, that's just a part of the deal. And he's on a really good baseball team. Like, does he get suspended? Does he get suspended for something that he said a long time ago? And what comes of that? And what I was thinking and what I was looking for was, what are his teammates going to say, especially the ones that are, you know, not white. And so the fact I saw the Jesus Aguilar one first, but the fact that that is present, I do think carries a lot of weight, because the whole point of what you're going to do, if you're like, okay, well, we're going to have this guy around and, you know, we're going to let him wear our uniform and kind of be an ambassador to our city, whether he wants it or not, or whether it's official or not, you know, you do want it to be in the past. And so his teammates, I would believe, know him better than almost anybody else. And so if they can speak to his character and speak to who he is, then, you know, I think that we need to really weigh that in the evaluation as well. So that was something that I had not, again, what did I say? You see something new every time you watch a baseball game, and to see somebody's tweets come up like that during an All-Star game, you've never seen that before. So baseball is
not exactly a thing I would cite as baseball is cool. Sometimes you see racist crap brought up during the All-Star game. It's a unique sport. But yes, it does kind of continue the trope at the very least.
I'm here to continue the trope at the very least.
Yeah, but much more important than Josh Hader giving up stupid takes on Twitter in the All-Star game was Josh Hader giving up a single to Shin-Soo Chu during the All-Star game, a hit I think should count for his on-base streak, because come on.
Agree.
He's one of the best left-handed pitchers in baseball right now.
Yeah, and especially because he only had one at-bat. Like, you get one shot. He had two. Okay, well, anyways, he took his shot, man. Like, he didn't get a full game's worth of at-bats.
Got it.
Went up there, clocked in, said, oh, this is a baseball bat. Oh, that's a baseball.
Up? See you what's later. What's up? I'm going to hit this.
Very good.
Yeah. Shin-Soo Chu, really, really good. His streak of getting on base did come to an end somewhat tragically in a really, really intensely crappy game.
Even though he did get on base.
He did get on base. He did actually. He just didn't, quote, reach.
Yeah, fielder's choice doesn't count.
Yeah. I pulled up the line on my phone. I wasn't able to watch that game, and I saw that he'd scored. I think he did score a run, right? Didn't he come around to score on that eventually?
I think so, yeah.
Whatever. I had some reason, but it was like, yeah, he kept the... crap, he didn't. And it was very depressing. I went and pulled up game logs to see if I was just wrong somehow, and nope. But Shin-Soo Chu, really, really good streak there. Chu has been absolutely phenomenal. He has done just some like incredibly impressive things over the last month or so. We've talked about them on here before, and I don't know that we can really do enough credit to what Chu has managed to put together, because it's just incredibly impressive. His WRC Plus up to 144 on the season. His WOBA and ex-WOBA over the streak have been... I'm going to refresh it with today's results now. And best I've got here, his weighted on-base average, which is sort of stuck to on-base percentage, 462. His expected WOBA is 458. Not getting lucky. Not getting lucky at all. Shin-Soo Chu.
I'm so...
just deeply, incredibly good.
Just super good. And so happy for him. I've said it 1,000 times. I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you, Chu. If this is his last week on the Rangers, you know, at least he's really left on a high note, because a lot of people really were against him for a lot of different reasons. And, mm-hmm. you know, you can't deny that this has been amazing. And so at least we will have these couple months, and then, you know, we'll see if he gets traded or not. But if he does, it definitely changes the way that I think the public will view the Chu deal. At least we'll still say he was overpaid or something, but at least he won't be a bad player, which is what I care about, because Chu is a good player.
He is, and I think he's been a good example for the young guys. Of all seasons for him to have this streak, this is a great year for that, just because... You know, we've talked about several of the guys who have struggled at the plate this season, and for them to be able to watch Chu go about his business every single day with that professionalism, with that confidence, and just being so locked in, that leaves a mark with them. I mean, they see that. They understand what it takes to get to that point. They've got to put in their hours. They've got to put in the extra work. But, you know, like guys like Odor, they're doing it. You know, Odor has been spending a lot of time in the field practicing his defense, practicing his hitting. He's really been listening to his coaches, and it's paid off. He's, before today's game in which he went 3-for-3, he's batting .364 in the month of July. That's just, he's just tearing the cover off the ball, and he's now actually a .259 hitter. He's got an above average on-base percentage and an above average ops. He's actually good.
Yeah, his WRC plus is .298 on the season, which is obviously just a touch off of league average, but given where he started, that's pretty solid. OBP, like you were saying, it was a .332. Slugging is still low, but he did hit a home run today. And off of a lefty, he hit that off of Oliver Perez, didn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah, and Perez has been a very, very good pitcher this season, and especially good against lefties. Kind of small samples for Perez, but he has been excellent and especially good against lefties. Odor took him deep. That's been very nice. I have been quite encouraged by Ruggie's performance over the last, you know, whatever you want to say, month or so. So, you know, since, let's say, you know, June 20th to today, it's a little bit over a month. In those games, he's batting .307, .384, .511 for a WRC plus of 144. So that would be Shin-Soo Choo.
Yeah.
Batting over 300, on basing just short of 400, slugging over 500. Now, very high BABIP in that period. I understand that. He has not been taking a ton of walks, although it's been much better than his historical numbers. Definitely a fan of this version of Rigned. And if he can be a sub 30% strikeout, he's in this last month, he's been walking over 7% of the time. If he can do that, that's the player we were really hoping for. Guy who doesn't walk a ton, guy who does strike out too much, but dude who makes contact, hits for power. He did not do this last year. His peripherals indicated that, you know, his great season may have been a bit of a fluke, but numbers are numbers, and he's been hitting very, very well.
And you can't ignore his defense either. I mean,
which has gotten a lot better. It seems like vastly improved.
Yes,
and his base running has been solid.
Yeah, he's got a stolen base today. Yeah,
he's been good. He's not been DeLiner DeShields in the base paths, but nobody has been DeLiner DeShields at all this season.
No,
which is unfortunate. That's I think a later topic to dig into. He had a very encouraging game today. Walked in his first two plate appearances. Stole second in both. Ended up scoring in both. It was a very DeLino DeShields kind of day. But he's been bad?
Yeah.
He's three not for, the guy.
3-for-31 streak?
Bad,
no. Accentuate the positive. Ignore the negative.
I don't know that we can ignore a particular negative. So, do either of you have a topic you want to leap into really hard right now that will prevent me from talking about a negative thing for a minute?
Nope, go ahead.
Lay it on me.
You know who's kind of sucked for a while? Like, a ton. He's actually been really terrible.
It's Gallo, right?
No, it's Elvis Andrews.
No!
Dude, he's been super bad. He's been awful. So Elvis came off the DL on my birthday, June 18th. He's been playing ever since. Not counting today, he's batting .229, .281, .305. Oof. This is like Hanser Alberto crap. This is awful. There's no power. He's not really getting on base. He's striking out a bunch. I watched today. I've seen some games over the last couple of weeks. My schedule has been pretty rough, so I haven't been able to watch as much baseballs I would really like. What I have seen, though, he looks slow. The bat speed is gone. And maybe the elbow is still bothering him. Maybe he just didn't quite round into shape. He has to go through a sort of spring training thing. But he's been back in the bigs for a month, and he just doesn't look like he belongs right now. He looks wrong. Something is off with Elvis Andrews, because he has been absolutely putrid for over a month.
Do we know anything about other players who have gone through this injury and what it takes for them to get back into baseball shape, so to speak? Are there any precedents out there?
Yeah, I talked about them on this podcast. If you would like to go and review it, somebody else, please pull up what I pull up in data. Elvis suffered an olecranon fracture. It's basically, if you look at your elbow, it's that little nub bone at the end that protrudes. If you just, I'm looking at it right now. I'm just pointing at myself. This is great radio. I'm looking at my own elbow on a podcast. But on the elbow, that little piece that kind of sticks out at the end, that's the olecranon. It's called an olecranon process. There's a bunch of nerve endings that go through there. It's not a super important part of the elbow, but it's something that really dictates like range and motion. So an injury there is going to shut you down for a while because that has to really fully heal before you can properly use the elbow again. And I said in these recordings, I was stunned at the time frame the team put on Elvis's recovery. It was very short for an olecranon injury. That's yep. a similar injury. His was contact. This was a non-contact injury. That was a very similar injury to what was suffered by, for example,
AJ Pollock, right?
AJ Pollock, yes, thank you. AJ Pollock, Ozzie Albies, I think, also suffered an injury like this, although his was slightly different. Like, Pollock had one. His was on a slide. It was a non-contact play. His elbow just kind of overextended and cracked. Pollock was out for months, like 5 months. And Elvis missed from April 11th until June the 18th, so 7 weeks. That's a really short time.
He's gonna
I don't
be
think
fine.
He was ready. I think he is going to be fine. I don't think he was ready to come off the DL when he did, and I think he's basically spring training himself.
Probably, yeah.
And it's just gross. His defense has been solid. His range is good. His arm has been fine. He broke his throwing elbow. It was the right elbow. He broke the trailing arm, and he bats right-handed, so it was the back arm. It was the right arm. That's his throwing arm. He can clearly throw. I think there's a little bit something there mentally or physically when he's swinging that's throwing his timing off a little bit because he has been just awful. He looks super slow. He's behind all kinds of velocity. It's been really hard to watch, and I haven't wanted to talk about it, but, I mean, his just, even the simple stats, his batting average has dropped like 70 points. His on-base percentage is down almost 100 points. His slugging is down over 100 points. His OPS has been sub-600 over this time span. It's been really rough, really, really rough.
It's been only 114 plate appearances, too, mm-hmm. which is something important to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think this is indicative of like Elvis's player. I don't think he's done.
Yeah,
I think the last two years is a fluke. I don't think this is. Yeah, he's toast. I think he's hurt, or I think he's still like working through some stuff. But
yeah,
crap,
I would
he's
say
been
so.
Terrible.
Yeah. Well, but that's you're definitely not going to let him not work that out, and so. Hopefully he does, and he'll be. I mean, before he got hurt, and it was just 61 plate appearances, but he was batting .327 with a .500 slugging percentage. So
yeah, no, like, he was phenomenal to begin the season.
Yeah, it's a super small sample size, but like, I am going to lean more to the side of he's probably still hurt, as opposed to he forgot how to play baseball in 2 months or in 7 weeks.
Yeah, you
know, so.
Yeah, I think long term he'll be fine. It's just, it's sad to watch him struggling because I watched those plate appearances today, and I mean, he's super frustrated with himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, just
it hurts to watch. I really like Elvis. I like watching Elvis be fun. I like watching Elvis be good. And like you're saying, it's frustrating, man.
Yeah, and I think you know it's funny because he did the rehab assignment with Frisco. He didn't do squat at the plate.
Nope.
There was nothing to indicate that he was ready to come back. I think he went 0-for, if I recall correctly. And there was like 3 or 4 games. I mean, he did nothing. So it's like maybe you send him back down or tell him to take some time off. I mean, Profar can fill in nicely. Elvis just isn't helping the team right now.
And in some ways, I don't care because this is such a crap season, and it doesn't hurt me at all to see Elvis be bad. But
well, it's actually for me, it's a positive, and that sounds really screwed up. But
it does sound silly.
But
It's good. We're tanking.
No. That's not why.
Okay.
I'm not on Team Tank.
I'm surrendering.
I know he's not going to opt out at the end of the season, and
yes,
that means
good point.
We've got another year of Elvis.
Good point.
Good or bad, you know. But yeah, no, I don't want to see him go away. I think that would be a huge loss to this team, because if Beltre's gone, if Chu is gone, if Hamels is gone.
Well, I don't think Beltre's gone now.
Well, okay, but if it's just Hamels and Chu, I mean, yeah. Andrews is one of the seasoned veterans on this team.
I think that's a hard thing to remember, is that he is not that, like, 22-year-old kid.
I know.
He's not 19 anymore, you know? He's not even 25-year-old anymore.
Right.
Elvis Andrews is old. He's old like I'm old.
But he's not old like I'm old.
Yeah, he's a month away from turning 30.
Well, I wouldn't have said that, Mike.
Well, thanks.
You're very young for a Mike.
What does it even mean?
It's a very vital age. Shut up, Hayden.
I'm younger than Ted Williams.
There are older Mikes. There are many old... Mike Maddox is a very old man. No, yeah, trades. Do y'all want to talk about some trades?
Let's.
Like, there was some news.
It's that time of year.
We've had a big week for trades. Obviously, Manny Machado went to the Dodgers from Baltimore. So Hayden, you were like not super wrong, but they did actually trade him. They almost didn't. They had that medical snag.
Yeah,
like, I'm doing enormous, like my entire arms are moving here for finger quotes on medical hang. Every single trade the Orioles do has a medical snag. Like they just complain about stuff. It's what they do.
Well, it's better than being the Rangers, in which case it's. You don't need to go through a physical. Prince
Shut
Jordan,
up, Mike.
You're
Get
fine.
Go away, Mike. Go to bed. That's it. You're done. We're cutting you off. Hayden, kick him out. Just turn him off. I don't know how this works. Do it. So Machado goes to the Dodgers for a 5-player deal. The biggest name there is Yusniel Diaz, although Braithwaite Falera is an interesting player as well. He's a guy who has some major league experience. Diaz was a big time Cuban signee for Los Angeles. They've done this a lot. They have managed to turn their enormous spending in Cuba into some very interesting trades. Like Los Angeles feels like a team who has actually low key made some really, really big time trades, but haven't actually given up anything of value in years.
Yeah, they still have a lot of their top guys.
I mean, they traded for Darvish last year, and they gave up Willie Calhoun, who I hope ends up hurting them. But also, Calhoun has no place in Los Angeles' roster. He's nowhere to play. They have 17 outfielders, and he's not going to play first. So he doesn't. Even if Willie Calhoun is really good, it doesn't really hurt Los Angeles to lose him because he wasn't going to make it there. It's like why I can't be mad about Odubel Herrera. Because we probably weren't going to do that. So,
I like the fact that for those of you who subscribe to Lone Star Ball, Adam J. Morris said that he felt like the Rangers got more for Darvish than the Orioles got for Machado. And that kind of made me go, wow.
Well, I think Calhoun's a better prospect than Diaz. And the other guys in that trade are very... all throw-ins, and you know the Rangers got a better top name, and then two throw-ins in AJ Alexi, right, who has been quite good, and Brendan Davis, who I forgot his name in like episode 7, and I feel bad about that. So I'm sorry, Brendan Davis. I know your name now. It's
and I
Brendan
know he's listening.
Davis, and he's been fine. He's been good this year. So I don't disagree. It wasn't.
It's just
a
surprising
bad trade,
to me,
in my opinion.
It's just surprising to me because Darvish wasn't at the top of his game the way Machado has been at the time of the trade.
There's a differentiation, though, I think, in terms of what a starting pitcher brings you at the deadline on a rental and a position player. So Machado is arguably the greatest position player to have ever been dealt at the deadline. It's like him, Cespedes a couple years ago, like... Teixeira? Randy Velarde? No, because Teixeira wasn't even having like a 6-7-1 season when he was dealt. He was really, really good, but he wasn't this good.
He wasn't a rental either. They had another year on him.
Oh, I figured Hayden was talking about when the Braves traded him to the Angels.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
When the Texas Rangers traded Mark Teixeira.
No, it's we.
Yeah. It's definitely we.
Yeah.
We're absolutely the media. Hello, Levi. I hope you're still listening.
Hello, John Blake. I hope you will answer me about the pants someday. Any more questions? To completely sidetrack you, derail this entirely.
Yeah. Go for it.
So what I learned is that after I said that I was going to ask John Blake about what color pants the team was wearing, I learned that he doesn't tweet out the jersey colors for road games. And of course, after I said that on the podcast, the Rangers went on like their longest road trip of the season. So I had to wait until this weekend to actually pull out that.
And I saw it.
That bit. Yeah.
It was pretty awesome. Did he respond?
No. But he will. He will respond either by replying to me or by blocking me. I don't know what's going to come first.
I can feel it.
Okay, just going down a wormhole on uniforms.
Sure.
Why would you wear the red tops on a day game when it's going to be 107, 108 degrees?
Honestly,
Why would you not go with the white top, though?
It doesn't matter.
No, I disagree. I disagree.
It's so damn hot.
Here's what I say, is that they should have an impromptu throwback jersey night and bring back those vests.
Sleeveless.
go sleeveless.
Yeah, do the D. Gordon look.
Yeah.
Which, I know they got some like, ragging, but D. Gordon can rock it.
That dude looked awesome.
In incredibly good shape.
Oh,
yeah. Gordon can do whatever he wants. He's fine. But to re-rail again, the Machado trade, I actually thought was not terrible for Baltimore. They did not get an elite, can't-miss prospect, but they're selling maybe 2 months of a really, really good third baseman / fine shortstop with a great bat. And I think this is what the rental market is going to look like in the modern game. Those dudes aren't worth that much. There are a couple of players who are going to be. Like, if you could trade for 3 months of Clayton Kershaw or Max Scherzer, that might matter a ton more
right
in the playoffs in the World Series than getting Manny Machado. Like, I think that's about as good as a team can do. I don't think we're going to see teams send off. I don't think we're going to see even a Teixeira trade.
Where a guy who had
1.5 years brought back, what, 4 major leaguers and a 5th prospect who never made it? Because that was...
That's never happening.
Elvis Harrison, Neftali Feliz, Gerald Sofalamacchia, and Bo Jones.
Bo Jones.
Yay, I remember Bo Jones's name in 2018. Like, 5 people on Earth know who Bo Jones is. Still, 4 major leaguers came back in that trade, and all 4 of them were, at some point, really good.
Yeah,
Feliz was one of the best closers in the game. Matt Harrison had 2.5 years of being a phenomenally good pitcher. Salty he wasn't good for Texas, but he did carve out an 8-year career?
He's a good player.
He was in the majors until like 2 years ago. Like, he played for quite a while. And Elvis Andrus, we talked about earlier, is obviously garbage and should not opt out because no one would pay him. Elvis, don't opt out. It's a bad idea.
I just have to say,
stay.
Is it just very Texas Rangers that when the Rangers are good and we're trying to acquire more talent, you have to give away the farm?
Yeah.
And then when we finally get bad and now we're sellers, you can't get anything.
Well, like, we can, and this could be a whole pod on its own, look at what we gave up. Like,
we've
some interesting prospects, but the Hamels trade, Nick Williams has been bad. Jorge Alfaro has been bad. They're both promising, but bad. Alec Asher is gone. Jake Thompson has been bad. To flop over to, say, the John Lucroy trade, Lewis Brinson's on his 3rd organization now, and he's been terrible. I still
really
love
bad.
Lewis Brinson, but he's been super awful.
Look at that Cubs trade.
Well, the Cubs trade, though, in terms of what we... The big one there, that was the Dempster trade, and the big name was... wasn't that Villanueva?
Yes.
That was Christian Villanueva, right?
Yes.
And he didn't turn into anything. And then the 3rd piece, the Lotto guy, and Hendricks clicked. And sure, But yeah, we didn't.
That's who I was referring to.
Yeah, nobody sat there and was like, I'm flipping my desk. I can't believe they traded Kyle. Nobody cared.
Like, but it's just, you trade that many people. You trade that many people over, you know, a series of several seasons. Yeah, or maybe half.
Years. 6 years. Yeah. It was 12 or 13, right?
It's just we depleted our entire farm system and got some magic beans.
This is what's interesting to me about the Dodgers conversation, though, is that like they've given up tons of prospects. I think they have this like reputation for not trading big guys, not making big trades, which is bizarre because they've had a big time deadline trade for 4 straight years now. They just made this trade for Machado. Last year was Darvish. 3 years ago was the was it the Rich Hill trade? Was 3 years ago? Or was that 4 years ago?
I think so. I think it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, like they've done this every year for several years now. They have made a move at the deadline that has improved the team, that has been a non-trivial trade. Oh, sorry. 3 years ago was Rich Hill and Josh Reddick. 4 years ago, I think, was Alex Wood from Atlanta. They picked up Wood and like other pieces for money. That was the like Hector Oliveira trade. That was weird because Hector Oliveira is terrible. Whatever. So like, Los Angeles has moved these pieces, and they have, in quote, sold the farm. They have sold off big-name prospects. Hector Oliveira is a big-name coming out of Cuba. He's out of baseball. He's never going to come back. Like, he's done. They moved all kinds of prospects to this stuff, and it hasn't come to bite them yet. And maybe that's just them being really good and really, really lucky. Maybe that's also a bit of a nature of this kind of trade. They've picked up the right guys who produced for them, and they didn't really leverage their own future to do so. Like, Texas acquired Cole Hamels, but the guys we gave up, it hurt at the time. It looked like it was going to really hurt the next year when, like, Jared Eichhoff was incredible. But, like, I would like to be able to root for Jorge Alfaro and Nick Williams and others right now, but I don't know if it's changing the team that we don't have those guys. Like, they've been mostly bad, really bad. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has been better than Jorge Alfaro this year, so.
And Brinson, which is wild. Brinson's line right now, and he's played in 84 games this year, so not non-small sample size alert.
It's more than half a season.
He's slashing 186, 232, and 338.
Oh my.
Like, just okay,
his
dreadful.
His slugging is a mediocre on-base percentage.
His OPS is 570. Which, I mean, that's trash. I hope he figures it out, and he probably will, but...
Oh, I'm rooting for him. I love Lewis Brinson, I would have loved to keep him, but wow.
So bad.
I remember the the 1 year I went to Surprise to see a spring training game, which was 4 years ago. I actually got to see Lewis Brinson in the batting cages, and I was pointing him out to my daughter going, he is going to be a stud someday.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, not so much.
He's not going to be Hans Krauss, so.
My Hans Krauss. I'll tell you what, though, about this discussion about, like, trading prospects and, like, you know, how certain players pan out or don't pan out and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the team that the Rangers currently have of, like, Mazzara, Gallo, Odor, Profar, those kinds of players. I'm glad that we kept every single one of them. And like you could have, I'm sure, in those trade negotiations for Lucroy or for Hamels or whoever else we've acquired recently, that you could have swapped out Mazzara for Brinson or Gallo for Brinson.
Oh, yeah.
Or Profar for, you know, whoever.
Say what you will about Joey Gallo, but he's been far better than Lewis Brinson or Nick Williams or Jorge Alfaro or Luis Ortiz or... Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
They've done a very good job of keeping the right guys. And that's...
So,
crap, even Ronald Guzman. Is that where you're going with this, Hayden?
I mean, like, I'm sure.
Yeah, like, Guzman is a guy who was very much a fungible, like, oh, yeah, he's fine. Like, he was like a middling Rangers prospect. I think if you had said, we're sending Guzman instead of Nick Williams for the Cole Hamels trade, everyone would have been like, woohoo!
Exactly.
Yeah, Guzman's a ton better than Nick Williams right now, and that's a very strange thing to say.
Yeah, and
or
so,
Lewis Brinson. It's bizarre.
So, yeah, and you can say what you will. I mean, and certainly the front office, especially in a year like it has been this year, will say, or there's a lot of room for people to be negative and drag the front office and, you know, we don't trust JD, bring Nolan back or whatever, something stupid like that. But you can say, oh, all he does is he trades all of our good prospects and we don't have anything to show for it. Well, the thing is that he's kept the really good prospects because they are currently playing in Arlington and they're really young and they're really promising and fun.
And so, crap, he's turned some of the bad ones. He turned Luke Jackson into Brady Feigl, who might actually be good.
Right.
Luke Jackson turned into Brady Feigl.
It's looking like we... Prospects are prospects for a reason, and you can fall in love with a name, you can fall in love with Lewis Brinson, and he can be, you know, your super athletic, just perfect prototypical center fielder prospect, and it would really hurt to trade him, but at the end of the day, he's still a prospect, and there's a reason why you trade prospects, like a couple of prospects, for, you know, an established star, because the odds that all of those prospects are going to be, you know, as sexy of a major leaguer as their name is in the minor leagues is pretty low.
I actually have a really interesting take on that then, just to follow up on that directly. And this was a really weird trade for me. And that was the San Diego Padres sending Brad Hand and Adam Simber, who, shout out to myself, I talked about Adam Simber in this podcast like 2 months ago. Adam Simber is great. He's basically a right-handed Alex Claudio. He's a near-submarine righty pitch with a very funky delivery. Doesn't throw very hard. He's the pigeon-toed guy. His set, he points his feet at themselves. It's really bizarre. Simber, though, he's actually been really good this season. He's been basically what Alex Claudio was the last, like, 2 years, where he is just bizarrely good. The Padres traded Brad Hand and Adam Simber. Hand has, I think, 2.5 years and a team option, and Simber's a rookie. To the Cleveland Indians, who have had an atrocious bullpen, and Cleveland sent Francisco Mejia, who even nominal prospect followers probably recognize. He was the guy 2 years ago had the 50-game hitting streak as a catching prospect in Cleveland system. Mejia is a very interesting prospect. I think MLB Pipeline had him top 20. Other outfits have usually had him as a top three guy in Cleveland system for several years. There are questions about his defense, but, you know, he can probably really hit, and he might be able to catch, and if not, he might be able to play another position. That was a two established, quote, Simber is a rookie, but two big leaguers, two guys who are expected to contribute to a playoff, a World Series contending roster. Two of those guys for one prospect. That's very strange. You don't see a lot of trades like that anymore. You don't, or ever. Like, I don't think we've ever seen multiple big leaguers going for one prospect as a common thing. That really stood out to me. I thought that was very cool.
But it was a really good prospect. I saw that and I thought, dang it, I wish we could have packaged a Diekman and some other person Diekman in our relief corps.
I think that the comparable trade for me is Kella and Leclerc. To look like Hand and Simber, in that Leclerc has, much like Simber, has long-term questions. Yeah, maybe this is a flash in the pan for Simber. Like, did anybody want to trade for Al Claudio 2 years ago? No, I thought it was a fluke. Turns out he was really good last year too, and he's been not bad. He's been above average. He's just not been great this season. I looked at his numbers. He's still been fine. Claudio is still an above replacement level player by a, you know, an okay margin, but. He's a bit questionable. This is like maybe last year trading for Keanu Kella and Alex Claudio, or this year going for Leclerc and for Keanu Kella. That's a lot to send. San Diego gave up something like 9 years of control. I still think I would do that to get Francisco Mejia, but. I think it helps set the bar, really interestingly, for the relief market. So guys like Kella or Leclerc, if we want to sell them, or dudes like Claudio, or much more appropriately, Jake Diekman, they start to make more sense. Or Jesse Chavez, like a crappy, I think he was like at 0.1 BWAR entering the season. Is that right, Hayden? Do you remember?
I think it was a clean zero.
Negative 0.1, zero? Yeah, it was like right around there. It was within 0.2 of a point. It was pretty bad. He went for a guy who looks quite a lot like a Kyle Cody starter package.
Like, which, load him up.
Cool. Cool.
Cool.
That's more guys.
And good for Chavez, because like he was not guaranteed a job.
I hope he plays in the playoffs. I hope he's good.
Yeah, good for him.
I didn't have a problem with him. I thought he was going to suck, and he didn't, so
I'm a dumbass. Sure.
But
I think everybody did.
Yeah, we all vociferously disagree with Jesse Chavez making the team at a spring training, and whoops.
When you sign a journeyman guy to a minor league contract, and then you say, okay, well, it looks like he's actually going to make the team, and he's going to be our long man, you do not think that your long man is going to climb up the escalator into like a late inning role at any point.
Yeah, he's been good, though. Bizarrely good.
Yeah, so good for him. And he's earned the chance to pitch in the playoffs potentially, which is, I mean, on a human level, awesome for him. So
Okay, I got one more thing to talk about, then we can turn this thing off.
Do it.
That's a trade prospective.
Okay.
I was looking at some rosters today. I was listening to the StatCast podcast. It's about Mike Petriello and To Effectively Wild. I've been catching up my pods. And they did not bring up this particular area of conversation, and they only tangentially. And that is that the Washington Nationals have maybe the worst catching depth in modern memory for a competitive team. Matt Wieters has not been good in 6 years. His backups include like Pedro Severino and some other dudes. They're terrible. They're objectively horrible. They're really, really bad. They need a catcher. And that Washington lineup bullpen could use a lefty. So Sean Doolittle is their closer, so it doesn't really count. He's a lefty, but they don't have a lot of other left-handed relievers. I think they've got to be looking at a guy like Jake Diekman. And I think Robinson Chirinos, for all his warts, makes a lot of sense. He's supposed to be very good at pitching staffs. He's picked up star pitchers very, very well. Trinus apparently worked really well with Darvish, and he worked well with Cole Hamels in terms of like personalities. They meshed quite quickly. And I think he's a guy who might be able to step in there with a Scherzer or a Strasburg and do what they want to do and help them out. He hits for some power, which Washington's lineup needs in the back end. They're not getting a lot of power towards the last third of their lineup. So in June and July, Chirinos is batting .225, .355, .472. It's an .827 OPS. That's with a .306 BABIP. He's not drawing like a ton of walks, but his strikeouts have gone down in that time. He's only had 35 strikeouts in those 107 plate appearances. And that's not good. But that is down. It was over like 40 for a while there. 37% strikeouts. He's drawn 13 walks in that period. Like, he's a guy who I think can contribute to a team who is not looking to add a superstar catcher. And spoilers, there aren't any. The best catcher of the American League this year was like Wilson frickin' Ramos, who is not good and also is seriously injured right now. So, Chirinos and Diekman to Washington? Maybe.
Yeah, the Nationals team needs a lot of help. They are not in an enviable position, especially in the last year of Bryce Harper's contract. So,
I think in support of this kind of a trade, Washington and Texas both know that this isn't a big money trade. They're not sending like Juan frickin' Soto over here. They're not sending us Robles. Like, they're gonna send over somebody, but they might be looking at a guy who's kind of under the national radar in Chirinos and a dude like Diekman, who's also in that same place. People are not talking about Jake Diekman on the national level, even though he's been quite good and he's a very good lefty. They're not talking about a ton. Washington's a smart franchise. That might be a place to see those dudes playing come October.
He's a good lefty, but he's not good against lefties. I think that's his downfall. Mm-hmm. His peripherals are not good on his splits.
Which is why I'm still standing by the Braves picking
him up. The Braves are making it.
What's up? Yes. Okay. But I think it's about going to do it for us tonight here on the Rangers Rundown. It's been a lovely Sunday. We've enjoyed our All-Star break. We hope you all did too. So we are refreshed. We are re-energized. We are ready to talk about the second half of the season. And by second half, I mean the last like third. The All-Star break seems like it gets later every year somehow. But I know I'm feeling good. I'm looking forward to this trade deadline. We've got, like 9 days?
9 days.
Woo! It's going to be fun. We got pieces to pick up. There's shopping to do. We're hoping that guys like Cole Hamels and Jake Diekman and maybe some lesser names like Robinson Chirinos and definitely dudes like Shinsu Chu, that they're all wearing different laundry soon. We can root for some of our beloved former Rangers with other teams over the last couple of months. Get some of these kids up here. Willie Calhoun being up has been very fun. I want to keep seeing contributions from guys like Ricky Rodriguez, and maybe we get to see Johan Hernandez. Oh, God, I'm already out of it. I'm sorry. Yeah. I depressed myself. All
right, well, there you go.
And Ricky Rodriguez got sent down, so.
Yeah. Well, he's going to come back up.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
August 1st.
I'm looking forward to these dudes. There's some names out there. Brady Feigl, let's see him. Bring him up. CD Pelham.
Let's let the CD Pelham. He's probably not ready to make that jump, but let's do it.
Screw it. What does it hurt us? Bring him up. Adam Chaplin. My big boy.
It's gonna be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, the rebuild, I think, will really begin in earnest here within about a week.
September is going to be crazy because.
Oh yeah.
What five are they going to choose to bring up then? I mean, that's going to be awesome.
Texas is terrible. We are nowhere near what Baltimore and Kansas City and even the White Sox are doing. These are some execrable teams. It's just, it's so bad. So as a Rangers fan, you can see your team sucks, but we are not we're not that bad.
Historically, you can get way worse.
So we're going to be bad. We should be fun bad. There's some fun players to root for. Let's go shop for some guides. Let's knock out the rest of the season. We're currently 6th, 7th, 8th in draft rankings. Let's root for a good pick. Root for a fun off season. See who we bring up. Let's have a good end of the season. I hope Jose Trevino recovers from his surgery. Best wishes there. Really rooting for him to be a player for the Rangers the next couple of years, and not just a guy, but a good one. So we've got some kids to root for. It's not that bad. It could be way worse. So keep your heads up. Be a Rangers fan. What's the worst anyone can say? We suck. We know that. We're fine. We're okay with it. That's what it is.
Yep. And we'll be here through it all.
We're going to be here through it all. We're going to talk. We're going to have some new stuff, some new bits, new segments coming up. So stay tuned for that. And until next time, we are the Rangers Rundown.
See you guys.
Good night.